Radio Tux. The German Linux Radio. The German Linux
Radio. We are here at the Desktop Summit 2011 in Berlin. With me here is John. Working at the KDE Lips and stuff. Dan, Linear.
Close enough.
Yeah. what are you doing?
I work on Gluon mostly these days, which is a game creation and distribution platform.
Also KDE.
Also KDE related. Yeah. Yeah. Work for a KDE company as well.
Okay. And Sean, he is a leader of the documentation team and a GNOME board member. And yeah, we'd like to talk a little bit about the Linux desktop or the future of the Linux desktop. But first of all, we are here at the Desktop Summit. Sean, what was the most interesting thing here in Berlin for you?
Well, this is my first Desktop Summit. I wasn't in the Gran Canaria Summit 2 years ago. So for me, it was very interesting to just meet with a lot of KDE developers and various people outside of GNOME. It's always fun to go to a GUADEC and meet with all the GNOME developers, but it was very interesting to me. Just even I know a lot of people had good technical discussions and got good collaboration going on, but even outside of that, just the social aspect of kind of getting to know each other, I think it helps when you later chat on mailing lists to actually be able to put a face to somebody having met them. So
yeah, and go to lunch, just talk a little bit, have a great time.
Yes.
So that's the most interesting thing. Linear, your big moment here, or
I'm kind of with Stuart on this one. That was it, yes.
Sean.
Close. Something with an S. Sorry. I'm with Sean on that. The whole feeling of the place that you've got people from all over the spectrum. I've been from KDE. It's mostly been KDE-related events like Sprints and Academy itself as well. And those are really cool as well. But being able to go to something like this, where there's people from various different other projects as well, completely unrelated to KDE, it's really great. It's broad perspective on how the whole thing works out. Mm-hmm.
John?
Well, I'm going to have to make that a unanimous vote. It's having been to the previous Desktop Summit and come away from it feeling slightly disappointed in that it felt like two separate conferences co-located under the one roof with a few common talks that overlapped a bit. To come to the Berlin Summit and have the schedule so deeply integrated and having both sessions where the title was simply something like, color management, not KDE or GNOME color management, and you had everybody there sitting together talking, discussing how they can improve the situation for everybody. And as you can tell from the state of my voice, I haven't written a line of code in this desktop summit, which means I've spent my entire time talking to people, which is the greatest benefit of these events, is to sit down and talk, because anybody can sit at home and code anytime you like. But the opportunity to sit and sort out things and build that community relationship. And so when you do see somebody pop up on a mailing list or IRC chat, and you know this person, you've had lunch with them, you've shared a beer, they're an okay person, and you can understand better where they're coming from, and the ability to build the community is the big takeaway for me from this.
So it's an understanding here and on the table that the change of the program to have integrated sessions is better than the 2 years before, right?
Yes. Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's what I've heard from basically everybody. After the last Desktop Summit, there was a lot of discussion as to whether we would want to do it again, what kinds of problems there were, and pretty much what you heard from everybody, at least within the GNOME community, was exactly what you're saying, that it felt like two separate conferences, and we should bring it together and have it, you know, more intertwining of everything. And this year there was a single papers committee instead of two separate committees to decide on things, and from everybody that I've talked to, they've said pretty much the same thing. It's really good that the two conferences have kind of merged for the purpose of the Desktop Summit.
Mm. Co-location just isn't enough when you're trying to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that sort of, you know, it gives you the path forward. You know, you can see this evolution. And so, you know, you think, well, okay, by the time next Desktop Summit comes along and we've established more open channels of communication and people have had more time to talk to each other, you know, the next one is going to deliver even better results because, you know, the word will get out, okay, it didn't quite work so well last time. This time, it, you know, really rocked because we, you know, had sorted out some of these issues and things were, you know, on a better basis. So next time, you know, people are going to go, okay, yep, it's the place to come. It's definitely good to be there, make the effort, and, you know, build those community efforts that we need to get going.
So there will be a next Desktop Summit?
I'm on the GNOME Foundation Board of Directors, and so I suppose it's half our choice, half KDEV's choice. I think the community is, by and large, very positive towards it and seems to want it. I can't make a statement that there will be one. The GNOME Foundation Board will be meeting with the KDEV Board probably today or otherwise while we're all still here, and we'll make a decision. So I can't, you know, announce there will be one right here, but I think people are overwhelmingly positive towards the idea.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like this whole model as well, with a Desktop Summit 1 year, then the separate conferences, then another year of Desktop Summit.
Yeah, and I think
it seems to work really
well. A lot of people say they really like that because they still want to keep kind of the identity of the individual conferences and the communities. Yeah. So this every other year thing seems to be working out pretty well.
Okay. So maybe there will be an understanding and we will meet all together in 2 years then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was the big things you sorted out here? What was the things you discussed, John? What topics did both or all communities here like to address and to sort out?
Well, certainly, personally, the two key boss sessions I had yesterday were the color management and the common print dialogue, and especially the color management, being able to sit down with the Color D author, Richard Hughes, and with the KDE guys who are interested in color management. And you know, Richard's working for Red Hat. They've been sponsoring his work to get color management end-to-end in the Linux desktop. But Red Hat's focus is obviously on the GNOME integration. So we've been able to sit down with Richard and go, okay, how are we going to work this out to get the KDE integration working? And the great thing was, you know, is Richard went, well, okay, here's a few things I can improve in the way Color D and the GNOME stuff is going to be structured that will make KDE's life easier. And we were also able to feedback that, you know, we had our expert there on scanning, the SANE library, and he was able to help Richard with, here's how things actually work in SANE, and they were able to work out a better model for how the scanning color management would work. So it was beneficial both for KDE and for GNOME, because both sides are now going to get a better experience out of it as a result. Then in the afternoon we had the common print dialogue, which has been a long-running development from the Open Printing Group, which is finally getting funding to come to a completion. I won't guarantee that it's something that will get into both KDE and GNOME. At the point where there will be a product that by the end of the year hopefully will be in a state where it can be considered, and hopefully it will get into both desktops. There's still work there to be done around look and feel, but again, it was a productive discussion of, hey, this is where the status of it is at. These are the things that we as a KDE group need Open Printing to think about when they're implementing it. There were some GNOME people there with GNOME issues that needed to be addressed, and discussing, okay, what's the pathway to get it to be acceptable to both communities so that we have a consistent, high-quality printing solution across both desktops. And again, this is, I think the thing that I've taken away, you know, we're in the same people in the room at the same time in the other Both session with a hardware group. And again, they were discussing things around low-level hardware and the infrastructure issues and how to integrate those better, work together to integrate it better into the desktop experience. And that's probably one of the areas where we can do a lot of the really hardcore collaboration to benefit everybody without too much, you know, disagreement over, you know, well, whether it's good or bad. You know, everybody needs to integrate with UDiscs. You know, it's as simple as that. So these, I think, are areas that we can work on together to establish the collaboration pattern and the getting accustomed to the communities working together well, because it's just stuff that we have to do. Otherwise, the user experience breaks.
Yeah. And John, for you, what do you think? Which topics?
I just want to say, John, that was actually really useful to me to hear that. Because I unfortunately, in the GNOME Foundation board, we use GuadEC or the Desktop Summit as an opportunity to meet with each other face-to-face. We do it once a year. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to see quite as many of the talks and the BOFs as I would like to. So it was actually really useful for me to hear that kind of feedback on the concrete collaboration that has happened. So I don't have a lot of really specific examples, firsthand experience. I know I've worked with KDE developers in the past on documentation, and we've discussed common infrastructure for documentation using the same documentation system. I've talked to Cornelius Schumacher as long ago as 6 years ago, I think we first met. And I've also met up with Richard Johnson before, who's also active with the KDE documentation. So we pretty much always agree on things. The thing that always holds that back is that very few people throw development resources into documentation. So, but I, you know, here at the Desktop Summit, I haven't been able to witness firsthand some of these great collaboration efforts that have gone on.
Okay. I know that there are some people working on accessibility across KDE and GNOME, and that was one of the things I heard. Maybe there are much more. Obviously, there are much more, but...
Like I sort of tried to compile it. I was talking to people a couple of days ago saying, oh, you know, I'm coming on this Radio Tux panel, and this, and as I talked to people, all these different collaborative efforts started popping out of the woodwork, things that I'd never heard of, things that just had absolutely no profile because people were going about it quietly in the background, talking to each other, communicating at a low level that just doesn't attract the headlines. And there's, you know, things like the accessibility stuff. There's a GNOME bindings sprint going on at the moment, and they've got a couple of LKDE bindings guys down there talking to them at the moment. We've got, you know, the more high-profile like Zeitgeist and Nepomuk working together to do things. There's just so many low-level areas like this that suddenly finding out that people are working together without, you know, any problems or issues whatsoever on common goals, and they just don't get the profile that they really deserve. And people just instead focus in on the one or two controversial things that happen that, you know, with big explosions and miss the bigger picture of there is actually a lot of really concrete stuff going on.
People just doing work and getting on with it doesn't make good headlines.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, we only get on Slashdot when we fight.
Yes, exactly.
Like the last time with the system settings.
Oh, yes, that one, for example. Mm. Yes.
Is this sorted out? Does anyone know?
I believe so, yes. I just checked my email earlier, and there were new emails in that thread. I'm not entirely sure why, because the actual developers came to an agreement already. So there seem to be people lingering on that want to have their say. But
it's a perfect example of a bike shed discussion.
Yes.
It's a name of an application, and it's something you don't need code experience to discuss it. You don't need any real activities. All you need is the ability to say, there is something called that there. There is something called the same thing over there. This cannot possibly be good. And people just go completely off on one because they've suddenly found something that they can talk about.
Mm-hmm. And they can fight about
it. Yes. Yes. Not just talk, but fight.
Okay, so do you know what's the agreement is now? Or?
Well, the issue is that both KDE and GNOME were using the name system settings for their system settings. This is a very generic name. It's not, it's not something like Amarok, the music player from KDE. That's a real kind of almost trademarkable name. But KDE does actually show its system settings in GNOME. There is the ability to hide various things in various desktops, and KDE does show it because users of KDE applications under GNOME or XFCE or other desktops sometimes need to configure certain things in the KDE system settings that affect their applications. So the proposal that I believe the KDE developers agreed to was there is a neat little trick you can do with the desktop files that you install that would allow the KDE system settings to be called just system settings within KDE, but when it's shown in other desktops to have it be called KDE system settings, which I think makes a fair amount of sense, and it makes it clear if you're using GNOME to go, oh yeah, I need to go configure those KDE settings, you know, so that you know that they are the settings that are kind of coming from that desktop. So, I believe all the developers agreed to that. So
it's one of these cases of playing well with others and playing even better with yourself. Mm-hmm. That sounds completely wrong, I know. You know, the idea that you are able to completely tailor the experience of your own desktop while still being reasonable in other places without stepping on anyone's toes. Mm-hmm.
I think it's also a classic case of, you know, how we shouldn't be communicating,
yes.
Unfortunately. And more particularly that we need to establish some communication channel for contentious issues like this to be able to have, you know, one community approach the other in a, you know, controlled way to say, look, we think we might have an issue here. Who do we talk to about this? How do we resolve this without getting into the huge public flame wars that end up on the front page of Slashdot?
Yeah.
And I know our community working group has realized, you know, this is an issue, and they're trying to, you know, establish links into the GNOME community to see, okay, how can we set up some sort of process here so that when things start looking a bit tricky, we go about it as adults. We, you know, raise it in a civilized way that, you know, we don't throw insults around. We go, hey, you know, there could be a problem here. Let's sit down and talk through it and come up with, hey, look, there's a technical solution there that solves this without us calling each other's names or you know, creating all this bad publicity and bad feeling that just makes us look bad. And
yeah, it was unfortunately on very public lists. It was on the GNOME side, desktop devel list is like the primary list, and I think it was also on KDE Core Devel is the name of the list.
Yeah.
Which I think is also a very...
It's very... Yeah. It's low traffic, but high subscriber.
I see.
So it's one of those places where a lot of people will read the few messages that do come in there. Or relatively few. So it's...
Yes.
Yeah, I really think something like this could have been solved like a little bit more back channel, smaller mailing lists among the people who are actually involved in it.
Possibly even an ISE channel. Drop into some KDE developer who sent the email, could have dropped into the GNOME developer channel, asked quietly, guys, what's up?
But now, you mentioned you have a community working group, was it you said?
Yes.
Are they kind of a, do they do dispute resolution or?
Yes, yeah, they basically cover the full community management thing. So they're also responsible for our, you know, Google Summer of Code and outreach efforts to attract new developers in. But part of their role is dispute management. We've, you know, had some internal disputes in KDE recently that I won't go into, but that they were very active in trying to resolve those. They have private channels that people can approach them and say, look, you know, I'm having problems with this person internally. Can we sit down and sort it out somehow? We introduced that a couple of years ago after we had, you know, several major flare-ups, and we decided, you know, that just does not work. We don't want to be doing that. So we put this process in place to try and manage that, and it's a core group of four or five people. Yeah, like who work in that area and bring in other people as they need. I understand Gnome doesn't have an exact equivalent.
Gnome doesn't have an exact equivalent, but as I understood it on the community working groups report this year, that they are actively working with people in the Gnome community to get something equivalent.
It is being discussed, so yeah. This is very interesting to me to hear. I now have a concrete example of collaboration that you've shared that with me. So.
Concrete and non-technical.
Yes. So, community issues like that, learning from other communities how they manage difficult situations, other non-technical areas as well that could easily be shared, or even, non-coding areas. I mean, sysadmins love to sit and chat about how they configure stuff, to cope with loads and all that. There's lessons that they can share. There's just, every level of our communities are more than just our coders. There are so many different areas. There's the documentation people, the translation people, the community managers, the designers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Designers? What are they? our graphics designers, or user experience designers. There's so many areas, and you can learn lessons from each other. Even though, you're working on separate, products or whatever, and the end result, you may have different, target markets or different, metaphors, or, we prefer to do this way, you prefer to do that. But you can learn a lot of the low-level stuff just from, even if you don't implement it yourself or you're not going to end up using it, you can learn valuable lessons about, they tried that, it went wrong because of this reason. That's a lesson that I can file away in the future if ever I need to do that. It's, no one person has the answer to everything. And it's, you can just learn from talking and observing and just,
So overall, the Desktop Summit is a success?
Yes,
absolutely. I think so, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, then the other topic we'd like to talk about a little bit, the future of desktop, or the Linux desktop. Here on Desktop Summit, there were some ideas going on with KDE 5 or at least the KDE libs.
The frameworks that are 5 yet. Yeah. The apps are completely not connected to that yet.
And on the GNOME side, GDK 4 and also the ideas what will be in the next some years. Yeah, where do you think what we will see in the future? I mean, we talked already about it. This year is the year of the Linux desktop, as the year before,
It's been the year of the Linux desktop the last 12 years.
Yeah. Yes. Funnily enough, I've been using a Linux desktop for the last 12 years. Yeah. Seems to work for me.
We just released GNOME 3, 3.0. We haven't even released 3.2 yet, and we are on a six-month release cycle, so we're pretty new on the GNOME 3 thing. KDE has had KDE 4 out for a couple of years now.
Two and a half years.
Yeah, and that's been just steadily improving as we do on both sides.
Yeah.
GNOME 2 existed for quite a long time, I think 10 or 11 years between 2.0 and 3.0. So I think there's a feeling within the GNOME community that we don't quite want to wait that long again before we have something called 4. And particularly with our development stack, a lot of things were cleaned up in GTK, for instance. Deprecated stuff was removed. Some of the things were modernized. But there were already things they wanted to do that would be API breaks that they just didn't have time to do for GTK 3. So I think they're already kind of opening up exploratory discussions on what it would mean to have a GTK 4, but I don't think anybody's really working on concrete plans at this point for GTK 4 or GNOME 4 because we have to figure out GNOME 3 first.
Mm. Yeah, I've also did a talk or interview with Matthias Klassen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we talked a little bit about GTK 4. Yeah, so you changed your whole desktop, and some people liked it, other didn't. Mm-hmm. So there was also a big discussion again. Yeah, what do you think about it?
About the change in the desktop, or the
let's start with the change in the desktop. So new UI and new methodologies, how to use stuff and something like that.
I love GNOME 3. I think it's beautiful. I have a history actually of being a window shader. There's very few of us left in the world, but you double click the title bar and it just turns into a title bar. And I've, you know, the option for that has existed. It actually still exists in GNOME 3, but it's very buried. It's not easy to get to.
Somewhere in GNOME setting, GTK. What's it called?
It's GCOM in the, settings. Yeah. So, but I've actually, I've stopped doing that with GNOME 3. And so it's kind of an example of like, I'm doing this old geeky kind of, you know, thing that everybody stopped doing.
10 years ago, yeah.
Yes, right.
Old school.
But I really enjoy it. There's a few things where I find places where I think it, you know, could be improved, but of course it was a 0.0 release. I don't know about concrete examples. I'm not the kind of person that likes to maximize and full screen everything. So sometimes I have an issue if I start getting a lot of windows on a workspace. You know, the zoom out effect that GNOME 3 has is really pretty. And it works really nicely for finding a window up to about 9 windows on your screen. And then it starts to get like hunt and peck through that thing. So, but I think, you know, the designers are, you know, they're using it. They're watching people use it. And I think the what I'm most excited about is the technology behind GNOME 3 and the GNOME shell just allows for very rapid prototyping and experimentation with different ways that you could make it easier to interact with your windows and then to get out of the way. Because the idea of the GNOME shell, the interface, is to reduce the amount of kind of Chrome around everything else and just let the user focus on their task. But I will say, ever since early days of GNOME, one of the applets that we've had for the panel is a little swimming fish called Wanda. And I do very much miss Wanda. So.
But there was also like a shitstorm going around, GNOME 3, okay, I won't use it. Linus said, he's switching now to, I don't know.
I know, there were really great comments that are exactly what we heard when we released GNOME 2. So,
Or the KDE guys also remember
exactly.
The discussion.
It's deja vu all over again. A little disappointing, you know, that some KDE people have sort of stood by the sidelines and gone, ha ha, because we went through the same painful process, and it was painful from both sides.
It's just,
and we appreciate, it's not, you know, it's a 0.0 release. This is open source. This is how we develop things. We don't deliver stuff fully finished and polished every 10 years with a, you know, certified by so and so sticker on it. It is painful at times, and you know, I haven't actually used GNOME 3 myself. I've seen the pictures. They look very pretty. GNOME 3.2 comes out, I'll probably give it a try, see how it works, and judge more based, you know, after a couple of cycles. You know, I wouldn't want anyone to judge KDE on 4.0.
Oh, no.
You know, 4.2 was getting there. 4.4, use 4.4. If you don't like 4.4, fine. Right. That's, you know.
Then you might have a point that it's not you.
Yeah,
I think you made a really great point that, you know, in open source, it's, we're just kind of putting our laundry out and letting you see it. And with KDE 4.0, I know there was a lot of backlash about, you know, this isn't ready or this isn't perfect or whatever. Yeah. But you guys had laid like a really nice technology stack to build off of. And so, yeah, in open source, we don't hold everything back and wait until it's all perfect before we show it. We put it out there and we let people start using it and giving their feedback on it. And that negative feedback and the positive feedback is what we use to continue to develop it. It's how open source runs.
Yeah. And it's open source software, so if you don't like it, you can use something else.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have an example of that in KDE, where people who were so against the move towards what we were doing in KDE 4, that they started the Trinity project, which is a continuation and refactoring of the KDE 3 code base onto Qt 4, which was... I'm not sure I agree with the idea, but it's the power of open source. They can do this. I don't have to agree with them.
It's really powerful.
Yeah,
sometimes there's a bit of an issue these days, and I think that we're with an expanding user base, we're getting more and more people in who don't actually understand the open source development model. That this is how things work. You know, this release early, release often. Things are broken. Our users find the issues, come to us, we fix it for them. It's a virtuous cycle. And I think as we get more users who are used to the other model of they get delivered an end product, that is all they're allowed to use. You know, they have no influence or say, it's supposed, that's it. We may need to, you know, find a way to educate and communicate to these people. Well, you know, this up front, this is how it works. You know, don't expect, it's a 0.0 release, don't expect it to be perfect, don't expect it to have every feature that you expect, but if you stick with us and work together with us, you will get something better in the next cycle.
Marketing, education, open source is more development driven than some commercial projects.
Yeah, I think it's also a pride thing. Being as we are, you know, open source is becoming more of a grown up thing, but we're still mostly just a bunch of geeks. And we really like this whole, oh, look at the shiny I've built for you thing. And it's, yeah, people really want to show off their stuff. So you want to do this release. You want to do it when it's sort of polished enough, but you really want to do this and show it off to people.
And you want to do code for things you'd like to use. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also a matter. The marketing is also getting more and more done, I'd like to say. So, yes. We are adults now, I would like to say. Not just kids coding and doing good stuff.
Certainly, you look as both our communities have matured. You know, we've acquired foundations and EVs to manage things. We've acquired working groups to manage the marketing or the community relationships, and as the community matures and what we deliver matures, we're not the same thing that we were 10 years ago of a bunch of hackers just sitting around a table churning out code. We realize that there is so much more that we have to do. There's so much more structure that needs to exist, but at the heart of it there is still this core of we're doing it for the fun of it. And it is trying to find a balance there between that professionalism of, we have this external reputation that we need to cultivate and manage if we want to get our desktop and software used by educational institutions and governments. And we sort of have to put on the suit and tie for those occasions. But how do we balance that against the energy creates this software is coming from people who just enjoy hacking and just getting in and doing something new. Mm-hmm. And finding that balance is going to be something important as we go forward, I think.
Yeah. We have, in GNOME, we have a kind of tongue-in-cheek group called the GNOME Old Farts Club.
We're the old dinosaurs.
Which is if you're over 30, and it's, I know. Yes. And people don't, it doesn't get used as much, but, a few years ago was when kind of people were starting to approach that age. And you know, many years ago, 10 years ago or so, you look at who's developing GNOME, and it's all, you know, very young people in college or just coming out of college. That's kind of like the beginnings, the history of it. And yeah, within the last 5 years or so, you've seen that, you know, people are getting into adulthood where they, you know, they married, perhaps have families and stuff, and now they have real bills to pay, and they don't eat ramen three meals a day. So, people are starting to think about the business aspects and you know, marketing the products, but also figuring out how we can enable an ecosystem of commercial companies to provide support or development work. We have a number of consultancies around GNOME technologies, and I know many of them also do KDE technologies. And, you know, that's something that we like and we want to encourage. And so that's, yes, a very adult kind of thing. Like we've decided, yes, people do need to make money. But at the same time, of course, we want to do this in a way that doesn't compromise the freedoms and the ideas of openness that, you know, we've all built software on. So. Yeah.
You said adulthood and so on, but is the Linux desktop already there? I mean, okay.
There's always more work to be done, but it's certainly getting there.
Yeah. I mean, okay, it's used by many companies, but I see more and more people around me switching to the Mac. People who are using before Linux and now are Mac users. Why is it so?
I don't know. It's
they're really pretty.
They are really pretty.
Yeah. And they're very cool. Yeah. It's in crowd.
I think part of, you know, they're able to sell a Apple sells a product.
Yeah.
You go buy a, you know, a MacBook, and it's the whole thing, hardware to applications. And it's integrated and it's beautiful. And it has that kind of same Apple design vision throughout. We make software.
Yeah.
And so...
The ideas behind Apple are the same that built Bang & Olufsen. If you've got an iPhone, you'd probably want a Mac to fill it up with stuff. And an iPod even. And if you've got one of them, you probably want an iPhone to go with it as well, because it's all shiny and fits well together. And it's just, it's an ecosystem thing. Once you've got one thing, you probably want everything else to be able to work with it really well. And that is one thing that we have to give Apple. All of their products work really well together. They don't really talk very well with anybody else, but they really work well together.
Yeah. So does it mean we, the Linux desktop also should have an ecosystem? I mean, there are a little bit works done, like the Plasma Active on the KDE side to build KDE on tablets and phones and so on.
I would personally love. There's been historically, what's our distribution model, right? We produce some desktop software. Distributions like Ubuntu and Fedora and SUSE pick it up and package it into something, and they give you an ISO that you download and you burn onto a CD and you stick it in a drive and you install it on a computer that you purchased elsewhere, probably coming with Windows or Mac OS already pre-installed. I would love for us to be at a point where I can walk into a electronics store and buy a GNOME tablet or a GNOME laptop. For me personally, that's, you know, that would be a real win to have that kind of distribution model to users where they don't have to think about, oh, I'm going to tinker around and install something else. I'm just buying something that just works, and it happens to be running this, you know, nice free software.
You don't have to wait for your geeky neighbor son to come over and tell you that, oh, you should be using this and do it for you.
Yeah. No, it's when I talk to people about why they're using Macs, it's always they're time poor, you know, they can't afford the time to fiddle around with getting Linux to run on the hardware and getting that, you know, the smoothness of experience that you get with a Mac, whereas the Mac, they open it, it just works, everything just runs. And it's, so, yeah, we need to have a way of being able to give that experience to our users of they don't have to be a super geek to be able to get, you know, this fantastic software running on this hardware. And at the moment, that is still a problem. You know, we've got people working very hard on it, but it still is a very hard problem. And
I'm also envious of Apple. They, in some ways, have it easier because they define the hardware.
Yep.
They have something like 8 different hardware configurations for a version of macOS, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you look at the amount of hardware that is supported, say, in the Linux kernel.
Yeah.
You know, the kernel hackers are amazingly smart people that figure out how to deal with a huge array of different types of hardware with different bugs and glitches and behaviors. Mm. And that's a very much a time sink for the developers. And sometimes there are things that don't work properly. There are still problems with certain video cards, with certain Wi-Fi cards. And it's something that people constantly have to pour time into to make these things work. It's something that users have to worry about. Hey, I'm going to install Fedora on this laptop. Well, is it going to work? Is my wireless going to work? Does this hardware work? And Apple has that unique advantage of they make a physical machine. And so all they have to do is make their operating system work with the hardware that's on that physical machine. They're done. So.
But how can we achieve that some of us can just go to an electronic store, buy a computer with GNOME 3, KDE 4.
Well, the funny thing is, we are in Germany right now, and there are a couple of companies here that are actively working towards that. They're based on KDE in this particular instance, but I'm sure...
Like the OpenPC or...
Yeah, the OpenPC project, and there's a sister project based, as far as I understand it, on the same platform, but... rebranded as something which the name of which escapes me right now, I'm afraid. But yeah, it's happening. They're working with a large electronics distributor here in Germany.
Okay, so maybe I can go to the electronics store, the MediaMarkt, Alexanderplatz, and say I'd like to get here a desktop or a
laptop.
Getting
it on the shelves in MediaMarkt in Germany would be an interesting. That would be a good step.
And the way we get there is that we do need to go and talk to the hardware manufacturers and say, look, you know, what does it actually require for you to be willing to ship our software?
Yeah.
You know, and we need that compelling use case to say to them, you know, this is cool stuff. Your users, you know, your customers rather will like this. They're not going to be returning, you know, these units in volumes of hundreds of thousands to you because the software is broken. So we need to work on the software experience, and then, you know, say to them, well, you know, if you work with us, we can make sure it runs on that hardware properly. You know, we provide a great software experience. You provide a great hardware experience. You know, together we can work to produce, you know, that will make you money and will get us more users. Because most hardware manufacturers, funnily enough, are interested in profit, not in not in the freedom aspect of things that we're interested in.
And that the user are happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
They, so long as the user doesn't return it. In fact, if they've got a, you know, web store that they can sell more stuff through you know, software like we saw with the Intel app up stuff, you know, where you can have hardware manufacturers can have branded app stores, so they've got a continuing revenue stream. So yeah, you know, we actually have to start talking to these hardware manufacturers. There's no way around it.
And we are, I think the hardware manufacturers by and large would rather not do the software. But they want an assurance that they have something solid, something that, as you say, people won't be returning all the devices.
That's where the consultancy companies based on our various stacks come in.
Yeah, that's definitely where we want to lift them up and give them an opportunity. I think, you know, we've historically talked about Windows as the great competition because that's historically what's been on the desktop. And in recent years, as you've mentioned, we see more and more Macs. But now as people are using tablets or smartphones are getting increasingly awesome, there's also Android, and Android has eaten up a fairly large market share in a pretty short amount of time. And the interesting thing with Android, it's built on top of Linux. It actually, I think it's really cool that millions of people have Linux in their pocket and don't even know it. Mm. Like, yeah. I love that. But Android is technically open, but it's not.
I saw a very recently published study that of all the various open sourced mobile platforms, Android is the most closed, which doesn't really most likely come as a surprise to us. Yeah. But you know, there are actual numbers saying, yeah, it's closed.
But of all the really, really successful platforms, it's the most open. So I have an Android phone because of the things that I can walk into my T-Mobile store and buy, it is the most open thing I can get. Yeah. But I would much rather see these devices running truly open and free software like GNOME or KDE.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one thing that I think, you know, that I've been thinking about for the KDE community. Sort of, you know, Migo is, you know, a platform that seems to be the best chance in the Linux world at the moment for mobile devices.
If nothing else, simply because the device manufacturers actually look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, you know, as a community, KDE needs to sort of start getting involved in there more, going, okay, how can we work together to try, you know, have better ways for getting our hardware and our software integrating into your distro. So it's, you know, there's so many levels in the stack here that, and so many different people we have to talk to and cooperate with, and it's a very difficult problem that takes a lot of time and effort. You know, it's not going to suddenly happen tomorrow. I can walk into MediaMarkt and, hey, look, there's a KDE Plasma phone. It's
Yeah, but we have to do it. Yeah. And there was already a thing called like the EPC here, the netbooks. The first were shipped with Linux, but
recently it was not. A bit.
Why is it so? So there was an opportunity. Somebody stepped in, but it didn't work.
Yeah, why? We had a problem with the netbooks, because they are designed to be very cheap and essentially disposable. So the lifetime of the EPC, the first EPC product, was 6 months. And they stopped doing updates for it, and it was left behind. And so people kept having this, for all intents and purposes, very outdated software on hardware, which could do much, you know, because of the way we work, it could just as well run the software that had been released now. But they didn't update it, so they just had this really old, clunky feeling stuff. It didn't really feel clunky when it came out, but that's what it ended up as.
Yeah, so I don't think the software at the time was terribly compelling for the form factor in use. You know, now, you know, we've had a bit of time to work on these sort of things, and we have a better idea of how to do it. Instead, at the time, you know, people had these devices. You know, what's this weird software on here? Doesn't really work too well. Okay, I'll slap Windows on it. You know, Microsoft, of course, came in, started throwing their weight around, and were willing to take a loss to regain that market share.
There's something of a came up with a new type of Windows distribution.
I think there's something of a user expectations issue there. If you're not marketing it heavily as it's running this awesome free platform, or it's running something different. If you go in, if an average user goes into the store and buys a laptop, either they're buying a Mac, which is very clearly a Mac, or it has Windows on it. That's it's interesting that in the tablet market, people seem to be okay with it running something else, because I think people view it as something a little bit more like a phone than like a computer. But the netbooks kind of straddle, you know, they're kind of like right on the fence there. And I think a lot of people went in and bought netbooks thinking that they're just tiny computers and really expecting it to be running Windows so that they could run Microsoft Office and do all their whatever it is they do with Office.
So when will be the next opportunity where Linux can step in? I mean, okay, that is now this tablet market. But
that's the thing. I have a feeling that Migo, over the next 6 months, there's going to be some devices trickling out into the market like Samsung's releasing their N100, Asus are releasing something as well. Acer has got Amigo tablet coming up as well. Actually, the Asus tablet is one that I'm looking forward to because it's the first time where we will have identical devices running Windows. I think it's Windows 7 and Android and Migo on the same hardware in a released form. So it would be something that we can actually compare directly because the operating system is the only difference between the A500, the M500, and the W500. It will be an interesting thing to see when it's released.
So this will maybe draw some users to the Linux desktop? No.
The Linux desktop is such an interesting thing because the desktop isn't irrelevant in any way. I'm not going to be saying that. I know it might have sounded like I was leading it in that direction, but it isn't. What is interesting is that unlike so many other things where Windows Phone 7 is very much a different operating system to Windows 7, iOS is very drastically different to macOS, we will have the opportunity to have exactly the same stack on the entire device spectrum. Our, call them competitors, can't do that. So we have a technological advantage here, which, again, the device manufacturers like to save money. And if we can prove to them that they can do this using our stack, then... And that's one of the things that the Plasma Active project is actually aiming at, is to prove to them that, yes, we can actually do this. It'll be an interesting 6 months.
Okay. What's with the GNOME site? You don't know?
There have been actually very active discussions on talking to
the manufacturers,
the people who actually create the hardware. We have some contacts. Many of the consultancies that have grown up around GNOME, companies like Calabra and Egali and some of the other ones, they know a lot of these people. So, you know, we hope that maybe through their contacts and the business relationships they've developed, you know, that would help us get to these. I think there is a very strong desire by the community to try to make this happen. It sounds like KDE has a little bit of an edge in terms of they're already planning things and getting things underway.
We're planning actively on, working actively on the software side. And as far as I know, the team is also in contact with some hardware people. But okay. I don't have the details on it. But the last I heard was that they did have some people. I don't know.
So everyone agrees on that we just have to go to the manufacturers, convince them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually, people like the average consumer can go to an electronics store and buy a computer or a tablet or a phone or
a car. Mm-hmm. In case of Migo.
Yeah, or something like that Linux on it.
Yeah, but it can't be the only approach. I suspect getting it onto an actual physical desktop, shipping through shops, is going to be a lot harder. You know, the tablet market looks like a great entry point, and as Vinay was saying, you know, we can then try leverage that to get onto the desktops. At the same time, you know, we have the entire government and educational markets where we do have a very compelling argument to put to them, and that if, you know, a government says I need 50 million educational desktops, you know, and then they go to one of their local hardware manufacturers and say we want you to put Linux and either GNOME or KDE desktop on all these machines to send out to our schools, then the hardware manufacturer will do it. So we need to come through the other channels as well to try and encourage the hardware manufacturers that, hey, this is going to be something profitable to do. If you've got this offering, you can, you know, win these government contracts that can be coming up.
I think one of the other things, if you look at commercials for iPad or iPhone or such. Apple pushes very hard how large their app store is. Mm. And this is compelling to people. Like, there's all these apps. I can do cool things or waste my time in new and innovative ways. Mm. so, you know, we will have to start thinking about the app story. Yes. And there is an issue where there's a network effect. The more people you get, the more developers you get, which, you know, leads into itself. I think this is somewhere where, you know, we should be talking to each other, because I know we're all very proud of our own technology stack. Mm. I love the GNOME stack and GTK, and I'm sure KDE developers love their stack. But you also look at apps are being developed in HTML now. Mm. That is a platform. The web is a platform. And it's a platform I think we need to embrace. Not necessarily that we have to throw away our own stack, but... because
we have to let those apps be better in our environments.
Because I think that's a really good opportunity for us to get a lot of apps. And if there is, and I know Mozilla has talked about doing a web app store. So this is a place where maybe we ought to be partnering, collaborating, so that all of us can get the benefit of this huge wealth of apps that strengthen, you know, all of our platforms.
Yeah. So, an app store.
There is an app store thing going on. The Bladeson project is part of that, working on an end-to-end solution for developers, so that you can develop your application and distribute it. It uses open sources, open build service.
Which is an amazing piece of technology.
Pretty impressive stuff, yeah.
And then there is, in connection with that, because OBS now exports its content via the Open Collaboration Services. And through that, in the spring, there was a sprint at the OpenSUSE headquarters in Nuremberg, where a whole bunch of distributions, not just OpenSUSE, people from Fedora and Ubuntu and Debian and a bunch of others, I can't remember all of them, but there was a lot of people there. And they all agreed on using this system to build an app store on top of. Even Ubuntu already has an app store. And even they accepted, we'll build support for OCS into this. Mm. So it's the whole app store concept is definitely, it's coming very much so. The next major version of most of the distributions are going to have something.
But this is more for the desktop again.
Not just for the desktop. The technology itself, I mean, the application, as in the app store application on these various distributions, are on the desktop mostly. But there is nothing to stop you from building this in a way, building application and shipping and building on OBS that can then be used on handheld devices. It's just software. Migo uses the Open Build Service as well. They've got their own instance. The Migo Community Build Service will let you build apps without needing to go through Intel or one of the other big partners. So it's very much happening. It's very impressive to watch.
Yeah, lots of people thinking about these things and how we can take them forward.
And a lot of people doing the work as well. Yeah. They're just sort of, again, the whole thing, they're sort of sitting in the background, not talking too loudly about it, but it is happening. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and if the Linux desktop should reach more people, they have to do it.
Mm.
So... there is no other way around. Mm-hmm. Or no, we are just, again, tech people using our stuff and no one else is.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing, though. We've had the equivalent of an app store. It's only been free apps, but it essentially has been an app store in Linux since many, many years. They're called apt-get, SIPA, and so on.
Synaptic.
Synaptic, yeah. That's closer to what I was thinking. But they are very, very techie, geeky-looking things. I mean, they do the same thing, but there's no reason you couldn't just plug a pretty UI on top of it, which is exactly what this project is doing. They're all based around the packaging systems that already exist on the distributions, and just wrapping them up really, really nicely.
I think, however, third-party app developers would prefer not to have to try to target their app at a dozen different distributions, each of which has flavors of half a dozen different desktops or software stacks. So having the ability to have a single place or a very small number of places where app developers can submit their work such that users can get it and such that it will run on, say, a GNOME tablet and also a KDE Plasma tablet. And I think that will really encourage and bring in the app developers. And I think this is a place where, you know, this desktop summit is all about collaborating.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a very important place. There are places where we differentiate ourselves. There are pieces of our technology stack that maybe we don't need to share because we are, you know, we have some different ideas. But sharing enough either code or specifications for how code should work such that apps can just be deployed without worrying about am I running in a KDE environment or a GNOME environment, that will really help us to attract more app developers, and that strengthens both of our platforms.
I think we already have a lot of that.
Oh, yes.
But there is, obviously, there's still always a way to go. But, but yeah, I mean, the FDO specs on desktop information, you can know which desktop you're running in. I know Qt uses it to place buttons in opposite ways and weird places and stuff. If you use... if you tell it this is a dialogue, it will place the buttons in the correct order according to whether you're running on Windows or Mac OS or a GNOME. So yeah, it's very useful.
But it's also a little bit sad. I mean, you said we have the apt-get and so on for quite a long time, and
we just haven't capitalized on it.
Yeah, and there are also app stores like I think Linspire did something click and run stuff. So these ideas are there already for quite a long time, but we didn't get it to the customer, and so now people are using Mac. Yeah, it's sad, but. Let's see what the future is bringing. Let's just talk some more minutes about the technical stuff. What is KDE doing for the next couple of months?
Next couple of months, the big thing, of course, is what we announced at a session earlier in the desktop summit is what we're calling Frameworks 5.
But it's not KDE 5.
Not KDE 5. Let's be very, very clear about this. It's quite interesting because when you were talking earlier about the GTK 4 technical changes and breaking bits and here and there, that you know there are some things you didn't get into GTK 3 and GNOME 3 that you know might need to break again to go the next version. You know, we're not planning anything huge and radical. There's not a complete redesign of the desktop or anything. Right. It's underlying technical issues that our libraries are somewhat monolithic. We want to break those up into more modular fashion so that people, you only use the bits that you need. And, there's a few API changes we need to make, binary compatibility changes. So we need a major version number change for those. So we want to do this work to take our existing libraries code base, break it up, and polish up some of the APIs. The idea is that eventually when we release these in the final form, that applications the KDE applications and workspace will be ported to them, and there'll be an absolute minimum of source code changes. So your existing workspace, desktop apps will just, you know, still have the same appearance, still work the same way. It's just the underlying technical frameworks that they're built on have been improved and polished, and a lot of it's going hand in hand with the Qt 5 announcement, where they're modularizing and going to open governance, and we're taking the opportunity to move some things from KDE Libs into Qt. Yeah. Qt Core is going to be a lot smaller, a lot lighter. It gives us an opportunity to repackage our libraries as being something useful for Qt developers as a whole, so that the whole Qt infrastructure ecosystem as a whole, we become a player in that, a bigger player. We've got these useful libraries. When Qt stuff runs under KDE, it suddenly looks like KDE stuff. KDE stuff runs outside, you know, it works better with Qt. There's a lot of low-level technical stuff that we can do there. So the next 6 months, 12 months in the KDE framework side, there's going to be a lot of work going on there. On the application and workspace side, nothing changes. You know, we've still got our 6 monthly release cycle of the KDE 4 series of workspaces applications. Those are going to keep coming out using the existing libraries. It's just all we're doing is switching the focus of the library developers. You know, there's about a dozen of us, two dozen at most, to doing a bit of low level refactoring stuff.
But this means it's a long transition to the new libraries.
Yes. Qt is looking for a Qt 5 release in about Q2 next year sometime, middle of next year, but that could slip, we don't know. So we'd be looking at KDE Framework 5 getting released, you know, second half of next year. By the time you then go, right, we've now released the frameworks, we've got stable API, stuff like that, you know, then the release following that might be, of workspace and applications, might be based on that. It's still very fluid at the moment. So, you know, we're talking at least 2 more releases, possibly 3 more releases in the KDE 4 workspace and application series.
Yeah. And then will be there a KDE 5 or just stick with
the
4?
Naming scheme may very well change. KDE is now not a software stack. It hasn't been for a while, but the marketing wording has been a little bit funny. KDE is the community. It's a bunch of people who make software, and some of this software is then the Plasma workspace, or it's the frameworks, or sort of the KDE frameworks, which is a bunch of libraries made by the KDE community. So the software collection, previously known as KDESC,
yes. Phrase that was never supposed to be used in public.
It was never supposed to be used outside the promo mailing list. Yeah.
That clears so many things up.
Yeah.
Most unfortunate it escaped.
Yeah. But, yeah. There's going to be a frameworks release that's going to be the Plasma desktop in various guises. And Plasma Active, of course, as well. And then most likely a much larger series of extra gear, which is the software based on the KDE libraries that aren't a part of the strict release cycle of 6 months. So that includes things like Amarok and DigiCam and Conversation and so on.
Yeah, we need to work through, you know, what's a nice way to phrase things, and, you know, release 5 or whatever, you know, it's applications release 5, yeah, may or may not happen, you know, have that name, you know, at a technical level, there's going to be version 5 point whatever of this application or that library, you know, the SO name and stuff like that, but whether that's, you know, that's something for our marketing working group to work on. You know, they don't try to tell us how to code, we don't try to tell them how to market things. Okay. It's, you know, there'll be discussions, but yeah.
But for the user, there won't be any big changes.
No. That's the one thing we don't want to hurt either our application developers or our users. We want this to be as smooth a transition as, you know, it's the equivalent, very similar to going from KDE 2 to KDE 3. Yep. It's, you know, it was relatively smooth, and, you know, we like to think of, you know, KDE 2, KDE 3 was basically really just one long series that just happened to have a number bump in the middle. And then we've started with 4 again from, you know, quite radical change. So 5 is just going to be another extension of that with a number bump in the middle. Yeah.
Okay. And the GNOME side? I mean, okay, GNOME 3 is just released.
Give us a few months, yeah. Well, I think it's interesting what you're saying about moving more of the technology stack into Qt. We've been steadily trying to move more things down the stack into GTK and the glib. Historically, we've had this kind of cloud of extra libraries on top, GNOME VFS, Bonobo, Bonobo UI, libgnome, libgnome UI. Often the case was simply we couldn't have it in GTK because it used Bonobo, which was this object model remote procedure kind of thing that we were really big on a long time ago. We've since been trying to push more things into GTK, but we have to be careful to do it in a way that doesn't introduce dependencies that prevents GTK from being usable by other environments like XFCE and LXDE and Unity, and also on other platforms like Mac and Windows. Applications like, say, the GIMP are written with GTK, and they do run very well on Windows, and there are a lot of users. So, you know, there's been a steady attempt to put more functionality into the lower levels of a stack, but often we do it in a way where, so for instance, the GNOME VFS was replaced by the GIO stack in glib, which provides a single API for asynchronous file and URI handling, where the actual implementation of it is provided by a dynamically loaded module. So when you are running GNOME, the module that gets loaded is the one that we provide that possibly has tons of dependencies and is able to do all sorts of things to access remote shares and such. But if you take glib and you put it on Windows, you still have that same API. There's no changes to the application, but the actual code that's providing the functionality doesn't have the same dependencies. It integrates better with the underlying platform. So that's been kind of the trick that's been used to push things deeper down the stack to get rid of this big cloud of extra libraries that people outside of GNOME really never picked up on, and to make kind of the whole stack more palatable to application developers. And I think that's continuing. The one place where we kind of have this separation now is with Clutter, which has been getting steadily more popular over the last few years. And that's a library for doing a scene graph-based graphic stuff, so you actually get really nice animations and effects and stuff with Clutter. And in fact, Clutter is what's used by GNOME Shell to do all of the really cool whiz-bang things it does. So it's kind of a question of when do you use Clutter, when do you use GTK? GTK has a much richer set of widgets, sometimes complex widgets for things like tree views and text editors. Clutter is not really a widget toolkit. It's not about having buttons and list views and stuff. It's more about kind of the underlying framework of things that can be drawn and manipulated and animated. So should we in the future rebase GTK off of Clutter? Should there be a separate high-level toolkit that's based on Clutter that integrates well with GTK? I think these are very open questions from the technology standpoint of what our technology stack will look like in later 3 releases or possibly even in a version 4 of the stack. As far as user interface changes, I don't think anyone's seriously contemplating GNOME 4 right now.
Okay, but these are the discussions that are made now, and we will see how it works out. Okay, then thanks a lot for this discussion here Yeah, I think the community here at the Desktop Summit is happy. They talk to each other. Mm-hmm.
From what I can tell, certainly, yeah.
Having fun. And, yeah, let's see that there is a big wipe going out afterwards that they are all starting to code what they discussed here. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I learned you didn't code that much the last couple of days, but I'm convinced that afterwards that it's getting started. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the Linux desktop is there. It won't go away. And let's see how the future will look like. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks,
thank
John.
You. Thank you.
Dan and Sean for joining me. And maybe we see each other again in 2 years.
Very possibly.
So. Thank you.
Das war eine Sendung von Radio Tux, herausgegeben im Jahr 2011 unter Creative Commons by Non-Commercial Sharealike.de. Lieder sind eventuell anders lizenziert. Mehr Infos auf radiotux.de. Unterstützt von Tarent.
Fairtrade Software.